Welcome to the Retail Tech Podcast. My name is Darius Wasefi, and in this podcast, I speak with the movers and shakers, the experts in the retail business, pretty much anywhere in the world, but a lot of it is in the North American markets. This interview is on Clubhouse and is being recorded. We will take audience questions later on if anybody has questions. And today I'm speaking with April Sabral, which is a she is very experienced in the operations of retail businesses, and actually has a company called Retail U, and we're going to go into the training aspect of the retail equation. How are you today, April?
I'm great. Thank you, Darius, for having me on your podcast.
Thank you for joining me. So I'm sure I didn't do justice to your background and your the intro. So please give a proper intro for yourself.
Oh yeah, I'd be happy to. Thank you. So I started off my retail career, like many of us in retail, accidentally at the age of 18 in the UK. And I started off on the shop floor as a salesperson and worked for Starbucks and Gap over there when they were opening in the UK back in the, I don't even say it now, like 25 years ago, long time ago, and was fortunate to be able to, work for some amazing brands early on in my career that were opening up in a new market, but they were established brands. I moved to Miami with Starbucks at the time, and I was in the field. I was a store manager at that time, and worked for them for quite some time. Worked in Miami for around 8 years, and then moved to Canada at the time with Banana Republic, still in field operations at store level. And then when I got to Canada, I started moving up into multi-site. So I worked for brands like Laura, I worked for Holt Renfrew, which is a premium luxury brand. And I was reaching director level at that point. So I had about 60 stores under my belt. And then I went to work for David's Tea, which was a Canadian loose leaf tea company that had around 150 stores when I joined. And then I left about 2 years ago as the senior vice president of sales and operations, where I led 250 stores, a team of around 3,000 people, and an operations team and retail education at that point. So I was part of the executive team that were, shaping the company and the strategies, but really always connected to the field and the customer. That's my passion, and that's really my expertise.
Okay, that's it. That's a pretty extensive experience in the field, actually. So
it is, yeah. And I worked for Apple as well. I forgot to mention that I worked for Apple for about a year. So I worked for some really significant brands, for some really big store counts. And so, yeah, I have really a ton of experience. And the last 2 years when I left David's Tea and left that traditional executive role, that's when I started Retail U, which is an online e-learning company. So kind of like a LinkedIn learning book for retailers to access quality leadership development. And the reason why we've done that is because I understand, after leading teams and field operators, how important leadership development is to the success of any retail stores. So that's where I am now.
So what's the real big problem with training for retailers right now that you're trying to, I guess, fill that gap?
Yeah, I mean, the big problem for training is things right now, currently today. Okay, so I mean, there's always been opportunities with training, but if you think backwards to when I started off in retail 25 years ago, I worked for mega brands, and they had the funding and the money and the resources to really invest in leadership training. And back then, that's where I got my foundational training to become the leader I was at, working for Gap and Starbucks. If you fast forward that to when all of the money started getting invested into online sales and e-com and omni-channel, I would say probably about, I want to say, let's say 10 years ago, when people started moving resources, then there started to become a lack of focus on field leaders and operations teams in terms of leadership development. There was a lot of focus around product knowledge, a lot of focus around sales training and onboarding, but not necessarily those leadership competencies. And then if you fast forward now to today, everybody's dealing with process and processes and policies in the new world of COVID, right? Like, everybody I talk to is like, there's a new cleaning policy coming out every week. There's a new mask policy coming out every week. So internally, the teams that would traditionally be working on management training are now working on, like I said, those policy changes and how to deal with that with customers. And so who's really building amazing leadership training for those field leaders, like assistant managers that want to progress up, store managers or district managers? And I think there's a real gap right now. And also because the learning and development teams got smaller in the last year, just because of furloughing people and having to make decisions in the business of where people can save money. So I think the problem that exists today is that internally, retailers that traditionally had the resources and the big teams don't have that anymore. But the need for managers to be trained well is essential, because in my experience running stores, if you don't have a great manager in a store, it doesn't matter what product knowledge training or what process training or policy training you put in place. If the manager can't lead a team to actually execute it, then you're going to fall short of meeting your expectations as an organization.
So is your target audience the management, or do you also do training for the staff?
Our target audience at Retail U is management. So anybody that holds a key to a store that manages people. So it could be a key holder, it could be an assistant manager, a store manager, and district manager level. And the reason why we've put our efforts there is, like I said, just my experience of, you know, in retail developing teams. The most success I had was because I had great leadership development programs in place when I started, and then giving them back to people when I was leading them. And everywhere I went in Canada, more specifically, I had to build those programs, which, you know, took us a lot of time. I had district managers that would be, looking for resources, looking for TED Talks, and they'd be proud to tell me about all of the content they were building, because content's a big deal. We know that in any organization. But I wanted to build something for retailers so that it would put that leadership level, those managers back on the sales floor and help the customers versus having to try and find content and make it. Because they spend a lot of time doing that, building it, whether you believe it or not, because they want to inspire and develop a team. So yeah, we focus specifically on management.
Okay. And of course, you know, whenever you see problems in the staff, you can most likely follow the cause of those problems to the management. So,
100%. Like, I would read customer insight surveys every day when I was leading the team. That would be one of the first things I would do in the morning. I would, you know, open up my computer, get my cup of tea or whatever, and I would sit and I would start the morning off reading customer reviews. And 9 times out of 10, Darius, when you're reading customer reviews, which is then translating into poor results in a store, it's coming from the person that's running that store. And, you know, I've kept managers in positions too long. For whatever reason, we have a hard time, you know, like making changes and thinking that we can change people. But usually when you do that, you hinder your results and the team. I mean, everything comes back to leadership. And I've made changes in teams where I've put a new manager in and I've seen the store results go up immediately. Because now all of a sudden everybody's engaged, everybody's connected, they're being trained, they're being coached, which translates into the customer experience. If people aren't happy at work and they don't like who they're working for, then it's going to be reflected in the customer experience. It cannot not be. So that's where the focus really needs to come back to, you know, who's leading that building every day? Who's walking in with the keys? Some of those managers are managing thousands of dollars, millions of dollars. And so that one person can have a real impact on 25 people, 10 people, 400 people, depending on how big your location is.
Yeah, that's, you know, a lot of times from my experience, at least in the technical world, is they pick the people that used to do something good, used to be good in like development, and they make them managers, and they suck at being managers. So is that the same thing in retail?
What they generally do is they pick people that are really good at selling. I've seen this a lot. So I used to have district managers that would, you know, come to me and say, oh, I want to promote this person. I'd be like, tell me why. Okay, let's go do a store visit. So I'd go do a store visit, and that one person that they wanted to promote was running around and helping 10 customers. But they weren't able to get everybody else to do what they were doing, right? So they're obviously not going to be successful because they need to be able to work through a team. So generally, it's the top sellers that people want to promote. You have to be able to sell if you're going to lead a team to sell, but you got to be able to figure out how to develop others to do what you do. And that's a skill. That is a skill. You don't just, some people innately have it, but in my experience, it has to be trained.
Yeah, and typically, I mean, I think if the compensation structure is set up right, the top sellers should actually make more money than managers.
100%. Yeah.
So,
yeah, well, you'll see that in like luxury brands, right? Where mm-hmm. you have somebody that's got a client book of like $5 million. You know, I saw that when I was at Holt Renfrew. And they don't want to be managers, and they shouldn't be managers because their core skill is clienteling and is having that relationship. And, you know, let's say in a luxury brand like Paul Renfrew, like building outfits and calling some those high, you know, high paying clients, you wouldn't want to take them away from that because that would be taking away from your business, right? So it's what you're looking for in a team leader that really matters, and then developing those skills to make them an even better leader. Because as leaders, we can always get better and we can always learn every day.
Yeah. I mean, and this is like really the art of management is to be able to gain the respect of people that are smarter and better at than you in some of the things that they're doing a lot of times.
Oh, yeah. 100%. You have to be able to do that. You've got to have a lot of humility and vulnerability, right, as a leader to be able to say, you know, attract a team that can do more than you, and you don't have to be the superstar. You know, people struggle with that. I know, I remember when I first got promoted to be a store manager, I had a hard time with it. But the further I grew up the chain and had to take on more responsibility, I couldn't be in the weeds. So I had to trust people. I had to learn that. And I received feedback along the way, you know, from my team, where they didn't feel that I trusted them because this happens a lot. I went into a store not long ago where I was asking one of the associates a question and I wanted to do a refund on something. And they said, oh, you know, my manager's not here. You know, I just need to go and call them, or like, can you come back tomorrow? And that to me, what that says to me as a retail operator is that manager is not training that team to make the decisions and empowering them. They're doing everything themselves. That actually hinders the customer experience, right? Because why should I have to come back? Like, that doesn't make any sense to me.
Right.
But that manager has to learn to let go, to trust, to empower, to train, to follow up. And these are all skills. These are not just innately in people.
What percentage of the time of a manager should be spent on training and personal development or skills development of their team?
Yeah, I mean, if I go back to when I was leading teams, I would say it depends on your business model and it depends on your payroll hours that you provide people and labor hours to be able to do that. But in a perfect world, you know, I would say 10% of your week, probably, of your hours. And, you know, the beautiful thing about what we've done at Retail U is because I know that labor hours are really short, especially when sales are not coming in through walk-in traffic anymore. I mean, traffic was dying in malls before COVID happened, and now it's like, you know, really, really tough. But, you know, and I used to have conversations with my CFO, and he'd be like, you know, how do you save labor hours, you know, spending training hours? But, you know, Retail U kind of gives you a bite-sized four-minute video that you can listen to on your phone or watch really quickly and then do an exercise in your week that you're probably already doing, but putting more thought around it. So it's literally like a 10-minute activity in their week, which is great, versus sitting and watching a TED talk or doing an online course that's going to take you 3 hours or going to a conference. So a built it specifically that way in mind to save labor hours. But I would say, you know, 10%, you should be learning. And those leaders that want to succeed, by the way, that want to grow and want to take on more and drive the business, they want to do that. They're going to do it. Most of them are doing them outside of hours, if the company doesn't give them payroll for it, because they want to achieve more.
How do you assess the performance of a manager?
Depends on the objectives of the company, but generally sales, right? Like, the manager's got to deliver sales, whatever those sales look like, whether it's a conversion goal, whether it's an average ticket goal. I think comp numbers need to change, because we can't compare comps to last year or the year before anymore. Like, it doesn't make sense to me. So you got to come up with some really good metrics. So you got to identify what your KPIs are, and then, you know, put a percentage weighting on that. The next thing is, you know, core competencies. Everywhere I worked, we always had an annual review on core competencies. So, you know, you select those core competencies. What's important to you? Is it team building? Is it communication skills? Is it problem solving? Is it promoting and developing others? Is it recruitment and retention, right? So yes, the aspect of sales and KPIs is there, but the competencies, those manager competencies, should be encompassed in that review and what that looks like. And so if your managers are being reviewed on that at the end of the year, what does that look like on a daily and weekly basis? Because a lot of people know that they're getting reviewed on this on an annual basis in a retailer, but then it's always a surprise at the end of the year, because there's no structure around what that looks like throughout the year, or there's no tools given to those district managers to assess and chat to those store managers. I mean, everywhere I worked, we put those things in place so that as store visits happened and we had visit checklists, we weren't just talking about the metrics and the customer insights, we were talking about the competencies. They were having those conversations. We were having those conversations on our weekly conference calls. We would talk about, what does drive for results look like? How does the manager demonstrate that? How do you measure that when you go in a store? That's really important. But again, it's like, if you're not training that out and you don't have the resources and the language, how do they know how to do that?
Yeah, those are really good good points. What about customer satisfaction, or I guess what we call online NPS?
Yeah, that's important. I've worked in companies that have NPS, and I've worked in companies that didn't. I mean, when I started my career, the first 10 years of my career, I was measured on my performance review on NPS. And it really made a difference, because it shifted my perspective, right? Like, I was working for my customer. I was working for my customer's feedback. One of the examples that came out of that was when I worked for Starbucks, we were measured on mystery shoppers coming into the store. And when I was in Miami and I was managing that store, you know, we would always get feedback that the customer never got the right drink at the end of the bar. They just always took the wrong drink. They were tourists, they were ordering frappuccinos, and we were really trying to solve this problem, because it would always be coming up on our NPS scores. The customers weren't happy because they never got what they ordered. And that's how the name on the cup was created, by the way, in Starbucks, because of that. Mm. So that didn't cost the company really anything. It was a solve that came from us being held accountable to customers' NPS scores and wanting to raise that score. And then look at what happened to the name on the cup, right? So if you put those things in place, it makes you, when you're leading a store, when you're leading a region or a company, actually come up with solutions that are working for the benefit of the customer.
Yeah, that's a really interesting story. It reminds me of a conversation I had recently in a room about the Toyota continuous improvement process, where you listen to everybody in the production team, anywhere in the factory, and of course, Starbucks is a coffee factory for me as a customer.
Right.
So that's exactly what they did. Is you listen to what the people on the front line who are their first contact with the customers are experiencing. That's a gold mine of improvements, and they don't have to be like huge, massive improvements. You know, the way Toyota got to be where it was, at least, you know, in the past 20 years, was by making small improvements on a regular basis.
Right, right. And I think the problem, and it's so important what you're saying, but I think the problem for senior leaders, and I could see this as I moved up into a higher role where I could become more disconnected with the field because I was in an office more, but I made it my mission to travel, like, and go to every district, you know, on a rotation to actually talk to the field. But that's really because I came from the field. So that's where my heart was, and that was my passion, because I had that direct experience. But, you know, the more that you move up, people, you have a title, right? So you walk into a store and people tell you what they think you want to hear because they want to present themselves well. We live in a culture where people don't want to say the wrong thing. They don't want to be perceived as negative. And so I always used to really encourage my team to, you know, be comfortable and say whatever it is that you want to say. And I'm not going to judge you for how you say it. I want to hear what you're saying, because nothing's ever going to come out perfect all the time. And I think that's really important, that when you are a senior leader and you are going to go do store visits, which you should be doing on a regular basis, that you realize that your title goes before you. You need to make people feel very, very comfortable to open up and give you the feedback, because they don't want to. And I just remember going into store visits, and sometimes we'd walk out and, you know, me and my directors, we'd be recapping, and they'd say to me, I don't know how people tell you all of that. Like, I didn't get that from them. Like, and I work with them every day. And I just, like, because I make people feel really comfortable and I listen more and I ask more questions and really get people to lower their guard. That's really important, so that you can really hear what they may not tell you.
Well, I hope that person listened to what you said.
Oh, yeah.
And changed.
Always.
So yeah.
It's important, though, you know?
It is, absolutely. It is interesting. And again, you know, I'm making these references and comparison to a part of my business, which is software and technology. Is in software, we have this thing called a bug bounty.
Okay.
We actually pay people to find bugs. And
really?
Absolutely, because if we find the bugs sooner, we can fix them without the customer seeing them. I mean, Microsoft, all these large companies, they pay millions of dollars every year to these hackers who find bugs in their software. And we need to do the same thing in retail. We should encourage finding problems, not discourage. We should reward actually a problem, you know, being identified.
Yeah, I think it's because people, like, when you're working in retail, and specifically in field operations, right, like, you're dealing with people's egos, personalities, emotions, and, you know, everybody always wants to do a good job, right? Everybody wants to deliver results. I don't think there's anybody that shows up to a retail store every day as a manager is like, I want to do a bad job today, and I don't want to deliver results. I don't believe that. But I do think that with that comes that emotion of, because I want to do a good job, I want to present myself well. And so, you know, that's the hard barrier to break. Like, that nobody wants to say, oh, I made that mistake, or I did that wrong. Or I've been in store visits where I've had my district manager, when I was a store manager, kick me under the table and be like, don't say that. That comes across as negative. And I was like, I'm always going to be honest. Like, I'm going to say what I need, because if I don't, they can't hear me. And I realized that when I went up further, the people, I like, don't tell me what you think I want to hear. Tell me what I need to know so I can help you. People really need to ask those questions.
And I think transparency and humility of the leadership definitely goes into that. So, like, you know, if as a leader, CEO or SVP or whatever, you feel that you need to be perfect all the time to gain the respect of your team, that just resonates down and just sets such a bad precedent.
100%. You're right on that. 100%. And I've seen that. I've seen that in businesses, you know, and I've seen businesses fail because of that.
Yeah. So I'm looking at your website. It looks beautiful, by the way. Nice job.
Thank you.
RetailU.ca. And you have a really good blog. I need to spend some time here. Can you please translate these into voice so I can listen to them?
That's funny.
Sorry.
Well, yeah, there's like 70 blog post on that. It's really interesting. It's all leadership stuff. But I am recording the book into voice right now. So the book, The Positive Effect, A Retail Leader's Guide to Changing the World, is actually going to be an audio releasing this weekend.
That's so awesome, because I can't read books anymore. I'm reading so much in the regular. I'm listening to everything now, and that's why Clubhouse is so great.
I know. I love Clubhouse for that. So, and then we have the live weekly Wednesday show where I interview lots of retail execs, actually. We had the head of Sephora Canada on, Scott Kirby, a couple of weeks ago, and we turned that into a podcast on Spotify and Anchor FM, and it's called The Positive Effect. So there's like 28 episodes now. We've had like senior leaders from Gap. We've had some really great people on that show. We've had all levels of leader in all different areas of business. So that's another resource that people can listen to, because these are people that have actually done the job. And I think that with the tech community, where I had success working with technology partners that were coming into when I was the decision maker working in a retailer, was having that partnership and like having a technology company want to understand and want to learn from the retail operator's perspective, because you're building solutions for us, right? So I would say that podcast is really good for anybody to listen to, because it's everybody that's worked inside a retailer on that podcast.
What's the name of the podcast?
It's called The Positive Effect.
Is it on? Is there a link on it from the website?
It's on Spotify. So you can find it on Spotify, on Anchor FM. And if you put my name in and The Positive Effect, it will come up. And there's some really great leaders on there.
Okay, that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, podcasts are really my continuing education.
Right.
So, I'm definitely going to look into this. But, I mean, you have some really interesting topics here, like mindset. Mindset is such an important thing for us in retail now.
It is. Mindfulness, meditation, mindset. I mean, it's funny. Somebody was asking me yesterday, we were talking about the book and talking about, you know, the Retail U training programs. And she said to me, you know, how did you get to where you were? I mean, obviously, you you helped customers, you delivered sales, you built really great teams. But, you know, I was a single mom working through retail, moved 3 countries. So I wouldn't say I didn't have stress in my life. I had stress in my life. You know, I had to raise 2 kids in my family, and working in operations, it's a lot of hours, right? But throughout my retail career and journey, and I do write about this in the book, in the Leadership Pillar Create, is I have always studied mindset. I mean, I had 2 parents that were American hippies and that used to send me all of that stuff in my 20s. My mom did. And so mindset training and meditation has been a part of my life for the last 20 years. And that's why I really share and talk more about it now in the business world, because my success, a lot of it came because I was able to not be emotional, not react, being able to take myself out, be mindful, you know, look at things from a neutral, objective mindset. And that came from self-development, self-study on all of that. So I think it's coming more into mainstream. It needs to. And if you ask anybody that's really successful at what they do, they're going to talk to you about their mindset and how they've actually worked on their mindset, and not just working on eating habits and going to the gym, but actually thinking of your mind as a muscle and how you actually, you know, look after that every day.
I could not agree with you more. I mean, I truly believe that our mindset and our attitude are the most important tools in being successful, being happy, being healthy, whatever you name it. That, I mean, those are like superpowers other than just technical skills of like software development or whatever. Those are important too. But if you don't have the right mindset and attitude in life, life is going to be a lot harder than it has to be. It's already hard enough. So
it's already hard enough, right?
So yeah.
It's going to be harder. And that's why last year we actually launched a meditation course on Retail U, and we launched a meditation challenge, and we had retail operations teams sign up for it, because we want to teach them this important skill, because I do see it as part of a leadership superpower.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we have Pablo on the speaker panel. So, hi, Pablo. How are you?
Fine. Thank you very much for letting me in. I'm totally agree with anything are you saying. and I've been teaching for the ICSC in Latin America for maybe 10 years. I'm very sad for all the changes that the organization are suffering right now. And I just want to ask you about what do you think about all the resigns that came from the people from McDonald's, Walmart, mostly in California. What is happening? What do you think?
The resignations? Is that what you were saying? Sorry.
Many millennials just resign in groups from the stores, from the retailing.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's a hard job. It's not an easy job, right, being in retail. I mean, I think that there's multiple factors going into it right now. It's a big hot topic of discussion. It's like, how do we find staff and how do we find part-time workers and the lack of people wanting to go into it compared to when I went into it years ago. There's different things, you know, whether it be the pressures of COVID, and feeling that, you know, they don't want to put themselves at risk and then their families at risk. I have a 17-year-old that last year was wanting to get a part-time job. But one of the things he said to me was, "Mom, I don't want to go out and work there and then bring COVID back to you," which I didn't even think that was on his mind, right? Like, to me, I was like, I wasn't worried about it. So I think that's a factor. I think that, you know, the way that companies treat people now, there's a huge expectation on the way people are treated. I was reading the other day an article on LinkedIn, and I think it was about, I want to say the company wrong. It could have been Calendly, which I am a user of Calendly, and they got nominated as one of the top millennial employers in the US, and it was because they were paying people to take something around vacation. They were giving them bonuses to have paid time off and work-life balance. It was all around that. So that not like normal vacation pay, but additional. And that was really interesting. And they could take unlimited vacation and not be worried about their job, which kind of makes people feel like they have a bit of breathing room if they need it, which is interesting because it's a different generation coming up. I don't know, maybe something internally has happened with the leadership team and people aren't happy and they're making a statement. I mean, there's so many different factors. This is why we've just launched a program where we are inviting retailers to sponsor a youth leadership program that is held by a nonprofit organization that's been working with youth leadership for a very long time, by the way, in Canada, One Voice, One Team. And we've created a Retail U course, and a retailer can sponsor this nonprofit program for youth to go through and then go through a Retail U course and then provide an internship at the end of it, as opposed to just posting jobs in Indeed and then hoping that anybody applies. Because it's really like confidence. Youth need confidence now because they give up very easily. They don't do well with rejection. So we're trying to do our part to kind of help the retail industry and the service industry. And that's just launching this week. And we have one retailer that's already jumped on board and is sponsoring about 50 kids going through this program to offer them a job at the end of it because they see the value in it. And by the way, these kids are really excited about being able to get this job, where we may have made an assumption, oh, they're lazy, they don't want to work, but we're giving them the confidence to be able to say that they can do it.
Walmart is offering paying careers in 10 different universities.
Well, I mean, this is a good point because I mean, the demographic is changing. The new generation have different expectations and different preferences. And I mean, again, you know, sometimes perks are projected as like more of a marketing thing. Like, you know, if you work at, again, you mentioned Calendly, and I'll pick on them, but they're a great company. We also use them. But at any tech company, if you do take too much vacation, you're not going to grow. So you can take unlimited vacation, but you're going to be left behind because people are very competitive, and that's how they make their stock options and rewards every year, is by showing progress. So, but I think it's definitely points to a different way of thinking for the leadership of companies, and retailers need to learn some of that.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I can't argue that. I think there needs to be a different way. And I also think that we keep saying the generation is different, the expectations are different. They are. I also think that they don't know how to necessarily walk in and apply for a job and communicate like they used to. Like I say, I have a 23-year-old and I have a 17-year-old. The 23-year-old to the 17-year-old, completely different challenges or communication challenges, let's say. You know, a lot of kids grew up like on video games and just like talk to people through a screen, right? Like they don't know how to walk in and actually apply for a job. They don't even know how to go online and put a resume in. Like, and if hiring practices don't change, I mean, there's a new software, JobPixel, that just came out. I was looking at it the other day, and I think that's kind of interesting because you just apply with a video chat. Well, if I'm 18, 19, and I want a part-time job, that's going to make my life really easy when I'm applying for a job. You got to make it easy for people and then give them the confidence to be able to go and apply. I really believe that.
Absolutely, absolutely. Hi, Hardip.
Hi, thank you for inviting me on stage. I've listened to April before on her LinkedIn profile, and I just wanted to add into, I guess it's a question, and adding the comment in that maybe this should also be discussed, and it might already be in the Retail U, but just an FYI, there was a conversation where you had with a woman who was a leader, I think, in Roots, in Ops, and her name was
Almira,
yes. And I actually tried to message you and her both because I wanted to write a LinkedIn post about that conversation to discuss it further. How this relates to me is that I've never been promoted in my career. And there's a comment where she said that she was trained to hire based on the Windsor Drive effect.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. So when I heard that comment and I was thinking, I put a lot of thought into it, and I was thinking, and I wanted to talk it out with you guys, but I wasn't able to connect. So I'm glad I was able to find you here on Clubhouse.
Oh, good. I'm glad you're here, too. That's awesome.
Because I think it's quite important. It's great that you're going to help the younger generation to get their foot in the door into the retail or service side of the business. But once they're in there, to help them get promoted, I hope that we open up the perspective and not just keep the Windsor Drive effect. Because the Windsor Drive effect was that if your leader has a connection with you and can relate with you, that's the only time they said that they would be willing to promote that person, or because they would be willing to invest that time and effort into a person. And for me, myself, I've never been promoted. And so I started thinking, but I had good connections with my leaders. We did talk about our weekends and we had that connection, but I still didn't get promoted. And I remember a VP once saying that, oh, Hardeep, you need to have a connection to get promoted. And she was also in operations. Yeah. So when I heard that Almira was in operations and your background was also, I believe, operations. So
yeah.
I was thinking maybe this is being trained over and over in operations, retail side of the business, to have this Windsor Drive effect and only promote those people. And then people like me are getting left out. And so here I was thinking about, you have two children, right?
Yeah.
So you have two children, and if the wife has a connection with one child and the husband has a connection with the other child, when the opposite child needs your support in a field that you're an expert in, are you not going to help them because you don't have as much as a connection as your spouse does?
Absolutely, you are, yeah. Yeah.
And that's where I was getting hurt, because I've never been promoted. And I was like, if this is being discussed on your podcast, and everybody, I was reading everybody's comments under that post, and I was like, oh my God, now we have so many other people that are going to also follow the Windsor Drive effect, and people like me are going to get missed out on promotions.
Okay, so I'm going to jump in, because the Windsor Drive effect was something that Ali shared, right? So thank you
yes.
for bringing this up, by the way, and thank you for finding me and bringing this conversation up, because it's really important to me that everybody's perspective is shared from their own experience. But, you know, one thing which I think is really important, and which I've always trained my whole career, and I can't say it for everybody because everybody has their own individual story of success and what they've learned and what they've taken away from it. And this is what I've tried to encourage in all the teams I've worked with, is not to get stuck in one way of thinking, right? To be open-minded and to not judge and to not actually make decisions based on your personal relationship. So that was Ali's experience or advice. Now, I know her, so I know that she didn't just promote people because of that, but I can understand where it came from. But if you actually get the book, The Positive Effect, and you read it, the first pillar is actually going against the Windsor effect, drive effect. It is actually teaching you to not judge, to if you have a personal connection with somebody, to question the people that you don't connect with more and make an effort with the people you don't connect with more, because you're looking for skill and not personal relationships and biases to promote people. And I always developed people that and promoted people that maybe somebody else wouldn't. I mean, I always had discussions with people, but that's where I think Retail U is so important, Hardeep, because what Retail U does is it takes the bias away and it makes you focus on the skill and ability. And I think the problem with a lot of leaders that I've seen with that I've worked, they have made decisions on the personal relationship because they weren't equipped or they weren't developed on how to assess somebody on the competencies that were required because the company didn't give it to them to do that, right? So that's where like a training platform or how you're measuring people sets the stage fair. Like it sets the stage fair because if you put your personal relationship aside and say, and you looked at 10 people that were applying for the next job and you measured them on the same competencies, but you had a tool that helped you do that and showed you how to do it, then people would be getting promoted that may not have traditionally been promoted. And I can tell you the difference between Canada and the US is when I worked in the US prior to moving to Canada, the US were, for me, in my experience, I can speak from my experience, not everybody else's, were further ahead in terms of leadership competencies and how to measure them on the companies that I worked for. When I went to Canada, Canada's a bit different. It's, and you're in Canada, right? I think you're based in Canada because I can see a Canadian flag.
Yes, Toronto.
Yeah, so the challenge for me when I went to Canada was it was very a relationship-driven culture. It was a very culture of like people not wanting to look bad, say the wrong thing, hurt somebody's feelings because, you know, Canadians are nice people, which is great, but it gets in the way of being objective, right? Like making the right assessment. And that's why I think Retail U is so powerful in what we've built, because we want to stop that from happening and break it down so that it gives everybody a fair playing ground. You know, and I learned that early on in my career. I was 22 and I had a member of staff make a complaint about me to HR, saying that he felt that I was favoriting other people and giving him direct feedback. Probably when I reflected on it, it was because I just didn't have a connection with him like I did with other people, because there's going to be other people that you just have more personal things in common with. And what that did to me was made me realize that very fast early on, and I was fortunate for that. And so I made the effort to always connect with people that maybe I wouldn't naturally connect with personally. I think leaders have a lot of work to do around that. It's too bad. I hear what you're saying about that, because that was not my style of leading. That wasn't ever advice that I was given. But the show is an opportunity for everybody just to share their own experience, and so people can take different things away from it. But I'm really happy that you jumped on today. I hope that kind of shows a different perspective, you know?
Yes, definitely. And I look forward to reading The Positive Effect and taking some more insight. And I do really want to write on this conversation as well, bringing in all different perspectives to have different viewpoints of looking at how we hire and the biases that we may face. Yeah. And how we can open it up. And it's not just one industry, it's in all different industries where these type of scenarios happen. And I think it's just important that we all look at what's happening and how we're hiring, how we can improve ourselves and how we can encourage, because this is great that the Retail U is going to help the younger generation getting in, but then when they're going to get into the workforce and then they're working for the organization where you have a certain group that was involved in creating and supporting the Retail U, but when they'll have the managers, how much involvement did they have in Retail U, right?
Well, yeah, that's why Retail U is built for managers and district managers. There's a youth program that's part of, you know, we keep adding things to Retail U to make it more valuable when people ask us for it. But we just launched a coaching program for that reason, teaching the positive effect, accept, create, teach that model to leaders. And I can tell you that some of the leaders that went through that were like having self aha moments and going, man, I could have acted different in this situation.
Yes.
Because it makes you kind of accept who you are and be honest with who you are and yourself and how biased you are. Like I'm, you know, I moved from England to the US to Canada. So I lived in three different countries and my kids are mixed race. So I've had a different experience having, you know, diverse kids in my own life and what they've experienced. So, you know, I'm a very advocate for like removing bias when you're a leader and not making personal decisions. I can tell you, I used to coach managers all the time when they'd say, oh, I really like this person. I'd say, take like out of your language and tell me what they do. Tell me what they're good at. Tell me what you're measuring them on. Tell me what they're delivering. Because it's okay. I don't want to hear that you like them. I want to hear what they're actually doing. Like be more descriptive in your language. And that's up to us as leaders to call people out when they're saying things like that. But again, that takes us to develop leaders to actually see that when they're doing it, right?
And also the other way around, I've had that personal experience where I like the hiring manager because I talked to her during when I'm getting a coffee in the hallway. But then when I started the job with her, I realized she's a micromanager. Every little detail, I'm like, I didn't expect her to be like this.
Right.
And it happens both ways, right? We do this.
Yes.
But it's interesting, and I really look forward to watching more of your videos on LinkedIn and learning more about retail you. So thank you so much. I greatly appreciate the opportunity to come and speak on stage with you. Thank you.
Oh, thanks, Hardy. Thanks for jumping up.
Thank you, Hardy. Great question. And I think just to add to that is the fact that you're going to write about this is definitely going to help for you getting more promotion opportunities to publish yourself and actually speak loudly and more publicly about these topics. I think this is very important. So now for people, now again, I personally have not seen them. This is a movie, right? The Windsor Drive is a movie that we're talking about?
No. It's so every week when I interview people on the show on Wednesday on LinkedIn, which is called The Positive Effect, you can find it on my profile or on the Retail You page or Spotify. I just interview different leaders. And so she just shared a story, and her story was called The Windsor Effect because it was coaching she had received from, you know, a leader. So it's a personal story of a leader. And every week, different leaders share different stories about their own experience and advice. You know, some good, some bad, and you'll take different things away from it. But, you know, it's just really celebrating the effect of positive leadership in retail.
Yeah, I was trying to search for that on Google, and I can't find anything
on
it.
On Google, because it's one of the leaders that were on the show. It was like, you know, her experience, you know? It's like in the book, The Positive Effect, I share the $1 million chocolate bar story. And so everybody always says to me, oh, that $1 million chocolate bar story, it really resonates with me. So it's the same kind of idea, you know? We
okay.
all have stories, right? We kind of call them things.
All right, cool. Now, one of the questions that I have is, you know, how things are changing, right? Retail is changing, and the retail staffing and the dynamics between the customers and the frontline staff and the management, that's also changing. And a lot of that is driven by technology. So managers probably have to be more technically adept to some things that they probably were not being exposed or expected in the past. Is that correct?
Oh yeah, 100%. Yeah. They do have to be able to use technology. I mean, a lot of managers were using technology personally, right? But weren't necessarily using it in a business. So a lot of them are technology savvy, but yeah, they do have to be technology savvy. And they've got to be able to execute. If a company buys the technology, the manager's got to be able to execute it, because your technology is only going to be as good as the management that executes it. That's one thing I do know.
right?
If you don't get buy-in from the field team and the how to do it, then it's not going to work, and then you're not going to get renewals and things like that. That comes down to, like, again, training people. I've used technology that we have no support. I've used technology where that technology company ensured that we were set up for success.
Yeah, so I recently interviewed two companies that are really interesting, I think, in the same space. Zipline is one of them,
mm-hmm.
and the other one is called WorkJam, and I'm sure there are more. And they're designed to improve the communication between the company management and the frontline staff.
Yeah.
So tools like that actually help.
I know Zipline pretty well.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, they're doing pretty good. So I think that's like another piece of the puzzle that can help.
But you know why Zipline's doing really, really well? It's because all of their team that they've hired, I wouldn't say all of them because I can't speak for Mel, but she's the founder, but she came from Gap. She was an operations manager that was solving an issue that Gap had. And then most of the people that she's hired in the sales team, because I've been on calls with them and I've been part of their client events, they come from field operations. So they know how to speak to an operator. They know how to create product for an operator. They know how to train an operator. They're really good at that. And that's why I say you can only be successful at a tech company if you're solving a problem, if you actually have people that had the problem on your team. I honestly believe that. You've got to be able to step into their shoes.
That's very important. So here is a problem that I think, from my experience, retail store management are going to face even more increasingly in the future. And that is the foot traffic to the store is reducing and online purchases are increasing. So how do you, as a local store manager, get into the action of the online shopping?
Well, I think that comes down to the company creating incentives and processes to make sure that that happens. And I think of a brand that's done that really, really well is Lululemon. They were way ahead of a lot of chain retailers. I just know that from somebody. I know a regional director that worked there. Let's say 8 years ago, they were already figuring out how to like shop online, decide where you wanted to pick up in store. It was seamless, and then incentivizing their store teams, because you know you can walk into a store and they don't want to help you if it's not helping them make their sales goal, which sounds really bad, but it's a real reality. I can remember going into a West Elm store with a friend a couple of years ago and they didn't want to help us, and I'm like, you have a computer right there, you can open it up right now and you can help us buy it instead of sending us home. But because I come from operations, I was like, that store team's probably not incentivized on the online sale. So, you know, if you want to get your store teams involved and think about this, the customer journey as the whole experience now, then those store teams have to get incentivized and have processes to do that. Because at the end of the day, if the company's not successful, they ain't going to have a store to work in the future, right?
Yeah.
But they need to actually be part of that and be empowered to create ownership in that. So I think there's a lot of work to be done in that, because a lot of bonuses and incentives and programs are not based on that. They're based on you know, the store sales.
They're based on 19...
Back to integrating it, right? Because if you haven't integrated how to measure that from a technology standpoint, you're going to struggle. I just remember at David's Tea, we struggled because we didn't know, we couldn't measure it. The reporting, the back end didn't speak to each other. So we didn't know if somebody was buying something online when they were standing in the store, that it was attributed to that store's sales. So somebody's got to solve that problem big time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's Lululemon is definitely a model in that. But I personally think that, you know, managers cannot also just wait for the company to give them all these tools, or they're going to be left behind.
What do you suggest then, Darius? Like, what would you say that a manager should do then? That's interesting.
Yeah, I think they need to get involved in promoting the store in their local social channels themselves to bring people in. It's not like, you know, this is the difference between lean forward and lean backward, right?
You've seen a lot of that in the last year, right?
Yeah.
Been empowered to have their own Instagram account. I think there's a fine line between protecting your brand, believing your people that work in the brand can do a good job of promoting your brand. So it just depends on the retailer. But I think that's something, again, it comes back to training as well, right?
I mean,
what are you
giving
them to communicate about the brand to their local market?
Yeah. I mean, if you have a manager that cannot professionally communicate with customers about your brand, then that person should not be a manager anyway, right? I mean, that's really important.
Yeah.
And once you do that,
you bring up a good point. Part of the coaching program that we just launched has the second piece of it is presentation online and offline. And some of the people that went through that were just like, man, I've never been trained on presentation skills before, but now it's kind of a requirement, right? You got to get comfortable on video. You got to get comfortable presenting yourself to, like you say, your local market, your customers, to drive your own business. So,
yeah. Interesting. You can use Instagram, for example, do live video. You can do, I mean, again, all within the company guidelines, which you should know anyway. So, and I think, you know, I know we're coming up on time. We'll end shortly. But I also personally think that the technology that retailers use and they enable is going to be a differentiating factor for recruiting. So,
100%.
You know, the new generation is going to make it, you know, they're going to pick between two companies if one is more socially active and it actually allows them to express themselves, go out and, you know, maybe bring that business, than another business that is completely closed and wants to control every single thing themselves.
Oh, yeah. And actually, they know how to do that, right? Because they're an Instagram generation that's grown up on that. So they actually they're much better than us. They're presenting themselves online and things like that. So I think that's going to be part of it. But I'm always going to come back to the organizations that are going to win, the retailers that are going to be successful, and they're going to the ones with great leadership and focus on great leadership and creating a place where people want to work. At the end of the day, there's three things that every employee wants. Number one, they want to know that their leader cares. Number two, that their organization or their leader is going to help them do a better job. And number three, that they can trust them. No matter what happens in the world, those three things matter. Because as humans, that's what we crave. That's what we look for. So beyond everything else, if you can't have your team saying yes to those three things 80% of the time, you're going to have constant turnover. You're going to have poor leadership. So I'm always going to say that leadership at the end of the day is what's going to drive success.
Absolutely. And on that note, I think it's the perfect closing argument. So, well, thank you so much, April. This has been really educational and wonderful to speak with you. I'm definitely going to check out the LinkedIn show and see if I can join some of them, and look forward to your book so I can listen to it on Audible.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. Well, thanks for having me on. And thank you to Pablo and Hardeep for jumping up and asking those questions. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you, Pablo, Hardeep, and everybody else in the audience who listened. So again, this was a production of Retail Tech Podcast. I'm going to add this recording to the website at retailtechpodcast.com. And of course, you know, this is also part of the Retail Tech Club, that you can see the club up there if you want to follow it. When we have other rooms, I typically do at least one or two interviews a week.
Awesome. I'll be following you and listening in.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, everyone. Have a wonderful day or evening where you are. Bye-bye.